time coffee on the stove. Your sweet ice cream, but you could use a flake or two. Blue bubble gum twisting around your tongue. I don't want you to get lost. I don't want you to go broke. I want you.
Just 'cause I love you, babe, in every kind of way. Just a little taste. You know I love
you, babe. Welcome to another episode on the Duan Marrero podcast. This is your host, Duan Marrero. Episode 190, man, 10 more episodes till I hit 200. I have about 5 in the archives that I haven't released yet, and it's nothing personal with the guests. I just haven't got around to it. But this one will go out today. I'm back in the studio in the Nest with the one and only Jim D'Lo. Rob is in the Nest also directing, and I have Purdue Northwest men's basketball coach Boomer Roberts. Pleasure.
All pleasure's well? Mine. Yeah, we finally make it work. I'm excited.
You know, Boomer continued to push the podcast episode back after 2 months. I've been hauling them, scouting them, texting them. I saw him in Atlanta at a Under Armour event. I was like, man, when you coming on the podcast? I had to stop filming. And a month later, he's here. So my persistence and resilience, I took after you.
Hey, thanks for having me, too. I'm Jim D'Lo, and I sit with DeJuan for a little while, and then I usually bunk out on him. But it's because he's playing golf all the time.
That's where he's at?
He's a good golfer, man.
I haven't made it outside the range right now. I put a few of my shots on TikTok and on YouTube just to get some people engagement, but I haven't made it to 9 holes yet.
9 holes by playing half.
Really?
I haven't actually swung a club since the PNW outing, which is tough.
I was previewing your podcast on the show today, and I'm like, well, we'll have Boomer Roberts in here if we can get him off the golf course. Because for a coach, you got good game, man.
Yeah, it depends on the day.
No, it's day. You know when a guy can play. He'll shoot double your score when he comes out.
I always wanted to know when I'm on the course, right? And I don't want to get too deep in it, but I'm the only brother on the course, right? And I always wanted to know when was golf instilled in you? Like basketball was instilled in me, the culture. But when I'm out there with Lauren and her dad, I'm the only black guy out there, and I'm like, was it ingrained?
What, are you going to the club? You're going to the club.
Fancy ones.
Yeah, so I'm at these golf courses, and, you know, I'm swinging, and it's a nice hit. I got them recording me so I could practice and perfect my craft. But when did you learn or get into golf?
Shoot, well, number one, when my assistants go out, you ain't the only brother on the course. And number two, you gotta play cheap courses now.
Okay.
I got kids.
You're playing at the club, yeah, you may be the only brother out there. There's no doubt.
But I think I was late to it. Regret is probably too strong of a word, but I played high school football, baseball, and basketball. And I wish I would have played high school golf, even if I wasn't good enough to play, just because you get to play. It's like playing pickup every day. No defensive slides, none of that stuff. You're working on your game and you're hooping. So I didn't get into it really till probably after college. And then I play the cheapest courses on golf now.
That's not true. Yeah. We played in the outing a couple of times.
But yeah, I didn't fit the bill for that.
That's top of the line.
I didn't fit the bill.
And not only that, DeJuan, the number one thing when you're learning,
yeah,
is you just got to be fun on the course. You can't be all angry.
Right.
And you got to keep it moving. And I love playing with Boomer. He's a joy out there, man. We're out there, we're betting and
I see so many people get frustrated out there, and it's a lot like life and adversity real quick, because you can't perfect it right then and there. And just because you're great in one avenue doesn't mean you're going to have that same success on the golf course. I went up to Wicker Park. Is that Wicker Park?
Yeah.
Up here. I met a couple of buddies, and he was like, come swing some clubs real quick. So I had my one left Callaway glove in my trunk, like I knew what I was doing. But I mentioned Jim D'Lo so I could get some free golf balls. And they mentioned, they was like, okay, sure, here. And I told them I was his assistant. So I go up here to Wicker at times just to go in the swing and
ring. Nobody else do that. Don't throw my name around at Wicker Park to get free golf balls, but you can because we're giving them some pub here. Can I make fun of him for a second?
Of course. Come on now.
Listen to what we're hearing, okay? He's got a Callaway golf glove. He's at the club playing golf. Yeah. He's moved to Chicago.
High level.
He's hanging out across the street from the East Bank Club. What's going on with you?
We call that bougie.
Yes!
Unfortunately, I got upset with work because they moved downtown. It was originally in Skokie. So when the office relocated in the West Loop, it made my walk 25 minutes exactly there. So it allowed me to take my camera and shoot people in the morning. And if we don't have an event, that's me getting up shots. So I come across so many attitude and energy and people downtown on their way to work, whether that's a laborer, a guy that's hustling, selling fruit. You have the guy in a suit or you have a guy like me in casual wear on their way to the office. And you see so many people, emotions and frustration when they leave or commute from Indiana or Wisconsin or from the suburbs. And it made me appreciate how grateful I am because majority of people really hate what they do. And I really love what I do. So it gave me a wide perspective when I'm down there. And a lot of energy, of course, to continue to hustle.
You know what? There's a little bit of shifting the discussion there.
I was going to say, he ducked it a little bit.
Because we're going to give it to him. And he's talking really serious about his art and all that stuff. And all I know is that you're like hanging out downtown. In the higher rent district. And
Just like Crown Point and St. John's and, bigger.
What you mean just like Crown Point? You just compared Crown Point to River North.
If you look up Crown Point's rent, it's around $1,700.
For a house?
No, for one bedroom.
You know what? You haven't looked in a while. It has gone up, I think, from $1,100 to $1,700.
I'd rather pay that, obviously, in a much more smaller square space.
You're paying $1,700 right now?
I'm paying $1,700.
Where you living?
River North. That was a steal.
You living in the river?
No.
Like, I'm one of those. I'm like the bottom of the tugboats. You feel me?
No. I'm in the heart of River North. Courtesy of one of my colleagues.
He's living it too, man. He sends me pictures
of
where
he's at.
I'm at
River North Park Apartments.
Tough life, man.
It is a tough life.
But it's for hustlers, though. If you got a hustler spirit, everyone that leaves that apartment in that morning know they got to pay rent on the first. And so
you're talking about golf too. You're talking about hustling. You're talking about emotions. You're talking about frustrations. You know
Absolutely.
What I'm saying?
But
that's golf right there.
But we also talking about
PNW
resources.
Basketball.
Yeah, that's exactly what
we
it is.
We also talking about resources, people who allocate those resources to make sure that everything's already complimentary once I get there because I'm a good person and I have a pretty broad network.
Yeah, baby.
Hey, Boomer, do you realize the transformation? I covered him in high school, and I may have interviewed him then or at least got a few words, but I interviewed him when he was at DePaul, which is in Chicago also.
Right,
so he knows the city. He's a different person, man. This is all, that was young, smart aleck, semi-disrespectful. And look at this, man. It's the full package. I don't know how it happened, but I still am going to make fun of the bougie life that he's trying to live right now.
You know what? I'm very fortunate. I got premium clientele that I could charge them rent, to cover this month's rent. But I give credit to that I'm a great human, and I have great people skills, and I make people better. So, those clientele just come to me. Just like I'll be at Waukegan at an academic showcase for guys that has a 3.0 GPA over at Nutria and that whole North Shore community, right? That's premium clientele. So I've been fortunate to cross over in Illinois once I made that transition because the Indiana clientele is here at State Point Concrete.
You're getting into Nutria in those places?
Yeah, the owner.
That's money, baby.
The owner of Paragon, where I work at now, Dave Brenner, he's a volunteer assistant coach over there. So instead of looking at guys like colleagues, I look at them like coach, right? You know how it is, the player and relationship coach. So you go in with your ego, just a little bit less humility, but understanding that I'm still willing to learn and, how can you help me get to where you are? And I think most people are open to sharing, like Jim is.
Hey, look at this. If you're listening to the audio podcast, This, you know, you're not going to know this, but he's got a brand new Red Hot Chili Peppers t-shirt on too. That's like, that's pricey. But you went and saw him, right?
You know what? I got it because I knew it was rare, and I knew you would like it. I told Lauren.
It's like four sizes too large for me to steal.
Yeah, I told Lauren. I said, hey, take this photo of me. I'm going to send this to D-Lo right now. Thankfully, I had service. But, again, I know that him and I haven't caught up, Boomer, but I finally got you here. You just came back from Texas. What is it? Waco? Did I say it correctly?
Waco.
Waco, Texas. Scott Drew, I'm familiar with Alvin Brooks, but what was your experience like going to Baylor, and what'd you take away from it?
It was great. It was great. Got to bring Kendall Aldridge and Xavier Allison, my staff, down there for a few days and just hang out and watch and observe. And you talk about the word humility. I think in our business, especially in college basketball, you know, we're paid to have the right answers. But in reality, once you think that you've arrived, you're really stalling your growth. And so for us, it was just a chance to go down and learn from people who do it at a higher level than we do. Now, theirs is way more of an organization, and they got, you know, 9 GAs and 7 managers and all this kind of stuff. So they can do more things than we can do. But it was really impressive. Their culture of joy is just inspiring. And I love to see people who are like-minded in their work ethic and their faith and the way they treat their families, and they're trying to destroy people on the floor at the Division I level, and they've done it at the highest level, obviously, with the recent national championship. They've been a top 10 team for going on a decade now, so it was great. We got a lot of time with the staff and the players, and even some of the former players. Macy O.T. was big time. Tweety Carter was big time, so impactful for sure.
So people that are listening and don't know the region where we're at right now in Hammond, Scott Drew is from our area and grew up in Valparaiso, not too far from where we're sitting, and coached at Valpo University, I think, for 1 year. And then Baylor picked him up and sent him down there. And he had a big job to do because it was not in great, you know, he had to start. And he has slowly built something up. I think it was his 11th year now.
21.
Really?
Yeah, because he took over. In my opinion, this is the most under-talked about story in all of sports. He took over for Dave Bliss.
Yes.
Who I actually had a chance to coach against when I was at Trinity. But that was the whole scandal. It's on Showtime, you know, where one of their former players, you know, murdered one of his teammates, and it was covered up and all this kind of stuff. Like, they were doing open tryouts at Baylor University in the Big 12 20 years ago. And for him to do that, everybody now wants overnight success. If you don't flip the program in 2 or 3 years, you're not doing it right. He's on 21 or 22, and they are step for step with Kansas. You know what I'm saying? And if you told someone that when they got the job, people would have laughed. So
his endurance were wondering, is like, gosh, you know, Valpo had gone to the tournament and everything. Why is he leaving
right.
here?
Is it
to
a go better
to
job?
Why is he going to Baylor?
Right.
Why is he bailing on the region? And I'm surprised they're such big time. I mean, that was nice that he was able to. You got some FaceTime with him.
Yeah.
What's he like?
His joy is pretty impressive. You know, he's got the juice. I got the nickname Boomer, now shortened to Boomer. It's a dog's name. Now it's a sound, but because I'm a joyful dude and I kind of bounce around the room. And Scott Drew is cut from the same cloth, but his cloth is a little bigger. At that level, you're really a CEO, you're a president. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's so many people working different things. So, but he ran practices. You know what I'm saying? He wasn't one of those coaches that was sitting on the sidelines and schmoozing and stuff. He was engaged. He was the guys, the respect level they have for him, and the love he has for his players and his staff. Like, he was big time.
So if you guys listen to the podcast, when I come on, I sit for a little while, and I get a few questions out, and then I bump out so Tawan can, Mr. Bougie over here, can take over.
And boom, baby. That's the episode
fair.
Today.
It's all subjective.
Oh, man.
Yeah, my day-to-day spending is only food. That's it. Hey, at the pubs and grills, like our Cheers, which is where I always see Dad at. What's the spot up here?
My dad?
No, what's the spot name?
Cheers or
no, it's the other one. where Mr. D'Lo goes.
My dad is 84 years old, and he goes to all of them, okay? That's not going to narrow it down.
The one up here in Highland. The one in Highland or Cherrville-ish area.
I don't know. I can't even think of it. You'll think of it halfway
through.
Someone
will text me and let me know.
Hey, so listen. And by the way, this is being recorded on August 9th if you're catching it somewhere else. But you come into a challenging situation also. Not only was it were PNW right outside of Chicago, you were going from NAIA or up to Division II. You got to make that step, which is a bigger step, really, than between D2 to D1, really. And you come in, and you got a similar situation to what Scott Drew faced. What was that like when you first got here?
Yeah, that was one of the reasons why I was so drawn to Baylor, is you look at the resources from them compared to Texas down the road, or Texas A&M, or Kansas, you know, like, they're just not in the same ballpark, and they're finding a way to get it done. For us, we knew coming, you know, Purdue Northwest had just made the jump to Division II. They were 2-26. They had the worst record in Division II.
I announced many of those games.
Yeah, and
I know exactly.
Their point differential, even, like, some teams, they were losing by 18, 20 points a game consistently.
I remember when they won one out in Westville, we stayed on the air another 45 minutes.
Yeah, celebration.
Yeah, celebrating. I'm out on the middle of a court. Everybody's getting interviewed. It was an ordeal to win the game.
No doubt.
You come into that situation. Why?
That's a great question, Jim. I think the biggest thing for us.
From California.
Well, we had been in North Shore, Chicago for 4 years at Trinity International. And that was a similar situation. We, as an assistant at my alma mater, we won the NAI National Championship in 2014. So we had the best team in the country. We had Gonzaga transfers. We had 2 6'9" Division I transfers off the bench. Like, we had 5 pros on one team. And to take a Trinity job that hadn't been good ever, hadn't won a game in the tournament, hadn't been 520 years, we kind of realized, my wife and I, that's kind of our calling, is to go places that don't have a lot of hope and don't have a lot of joy and don't have a lot of success, and do our best to change it. So for us, this was another chance to do that. And honestly, we didn't know exactly what we were stepping into. There was a little bit of naivety in it. But at the same time, it's been a really cool adventure to see us now competing, you know, with top 25 teams regularly. And we're still not quite to where I want to get to, but that's one of the draws here, was to bring some hope and joy to a place that really had never had it.
DeJuan and I both grew up here and live here. We don't get a ton of people that are attracted to come to this industrial area south of Chicago. How's that transition been for you and your family?
For us, it's just, we never had a place that, like, we got to be here. You know, we're 1,500 miles from home. We got 3 boys under 10. My wife is a warrior. So to us, like, it doesn't matter where we go. And one of the coolest things for our family specifically, we lived in Orange County, so South LA, and then North Shore, Chicago. And people talk about the speed of life here. And some of our friends that are from here are like, man, it's getting faster than it's ever been. For us, this has been a nice change of pace, because it's the slowest place. People are kind and care about you here. You know, we were just in California on the West Coast, and people will run right past you. I'll give them a little what's up. No response. You know what I'm saying? Like, every time I see Rico, first time we really got to know each other, I was on crutches dealing with a meniscus injury. I was scouting another team or watching one of my former players play, and you came up, dabbed me up, and we sat at IU Northwest and just kicked it for 2 hours. So that was something that I think people are just way more genuine here. And for us, it's been a breath of fresh air.
The West Coast. You know, the West Coast is a grind. I had the experience of going to California for work. And we talked about it. Just the whole West Coast is just a different vibe and energy. Their persona, I compare them to having an East Coast, New York, Baltimore teammate in the locker room. Because you could speak to them. You don't know if they're having a bad mood or if they're in a happy mood. Some days you just got to feel them out. And in California, I witnessed that same experience. People were just taking selfies and recording, and they barely said, excuse me. So I know what you mean.
I've been making fun of him, because that is another one. He sends me a picture. He's on Santa Monica Pier all dressed up in the white shorts and the nice belt.
He's over-exaggerated.
No, I got the picture. I'm like, this guy is getting it.
I got Arbar.
Our bar. That's yes, where my dad.
Our bar.
Yeah, that's where my dad goes.
So
yeah.
Right there on Indy.
Before the question I'm going to ask you, I want Jim to know this. So there's Lupo's in River North and in Chicago. So I always look for the R bars, you know, like where there's a Shamrock pub or bar that says established in 1941. Those are the cheapest menus and drinks to get. And so I kind of live my day-to-day on finding those Lupo's in Chicago and River North where there's only one way in and one way out, and the prices are the same at our bar. Just to...
To keep
piggy off
where you can eat under $15.
Yeah.
Hard to do, man.
May get a course, but that's the thrill of finding the Lupo's in Chicago and utilizing my iPhone. So I just wanted to piggyback off that, by the way.
I haven't seen them in a while, and this is all building up, so I'm sorry if it's spilling out over into your podcast.
This is awesome. This is great content.
So let's look at it. If you guys don't know the situation here at Jed TV and WJOB, we're on the campus. And we do all the games, and we broadcast all the games, and we have a really close relationship. And I really, it's a beautiful moment to go watch a game. I don't announce them anymore. That's gone to better announcers. But to go to a game is a great experience. I feel, though, that this area hasn't quite noticed it yet. Do you agree? And what can we do to change that?
Yeah, and one of it I own, you know, we got pretty good our third year, and it happened to be, you know, we beat a top 25 team, a team that made the Elite Eight. We beat them on the road by 25, but it was COVID, and no one could come, you know. And so
that game wasn't even, I don't think it was televised. We looked for it. We couldn't find it. Yeah.
Yeah, it was, we were on the road, but it was one of those things that if your best season is during COVID when no one can come, it's hard, you know. So last year we got better and better. We had a guy that was probably the best player I've ever coached that had some NBA workouts this spring, and then another guy that'll play overseas that was top five in the league in scoring and assists, and so we had a good team. But one of it's on us. We got to continue to get better because people come to, they want to watch the best. And the other thing is, you mentioned it earlier off the air, establishment. You know, Munster's been established. Coach Hackett's done a great job. Milosnik before Ryan Sexton got the job at Lake Central, you know. You got Bishop Knoll, you got Hammond, Larry Moore. You know, I know there's a lot of coaching changes now.
Huge changes. You know, Larry Moore is no longer here. He's going to SFDS across the state line. But
people know these names, and these are region guys, and they've been here forever. So you can go to a Munster High School game. To me, it's not an either-or. To me, it's a both-and. You know, everybody that's come that we've invited, that we've gotten over the region, whether it's coaches or players or AAU or just people at local businesses, they walk away going, wow, like – there was one time, there's 15 Division I transfers on the two rosters between us and another school in our league. And people were like, I didn't realize you had Big 12, Big 10, SEC, ACC, you know what I'm saying? Like, those guys in our league. So I think the product is really high. I think people just knowing that it's Division II and giving it a chance now, the more we can do that combined with winning, I think word will get out.
Can I get one more before I go?
No, spill away.
Taking over his podcast. He loves that, by the way. How has the portal changed your game?
It's changed quite a bit, you know. Rico actually sent me a article that I really like. Mick Cronin had a quote that says, like, if you bury your head in the sand and the last words of dying businesses are, we've always done it this way, right? For us, this is going on year 10 as a head coach for me. And 16 as a college coach. For me, the portal has obviously changed it for good and for bad, but I'm just not one of those guys that complains about it. You know, like, it's here. It's like the Pac-12. The Pac-12 is no longer here. You know, we could complain about the 108 years they had, but it ain't, you know, it's not coming back. For us, the portal has allowed us to get some guys that maybe want to play more and they were coming from higher levels and things like that. And I understand that, you know, just like everybody, we've lost some guys to the portal, whether it's transferring up after they had a really good year to Division I or the ability to not have to sit and go transfer out. But I think it's really benefited teams with really good cultures. If people want to play for you as a coach, you and your staff, and they want to play with those guys, their teammates, we've had so many guys come in that haven't had relationships with their coaches. It's just basketball wherever they were. And they've come here and they've thrived because they were able to not have to sit a year. So for us, it's actually been helpful overall.
DeJuan, let me ask you this. I've interviewed Boomer outside of your podcast other times. And there was one time that we were doing an interview, and I was talking about the relationship between coaches and players and how that's evolved over the many years.
Absolutely.
And Boomer was like, you know, I listen to their problems, I get involved with them, and I'm supportive, and there's a lot of interaction. My whole thing coming from a different generation is that that was not part of the coaching that you used to have to do. You were there to bring the best players in, and then you were able to put them out there and move them around and just create a team. This relationship with the closeness between the coaches and the players, was that around when you were playing?
How to put it in words, it's much more with NIL. You have more parents paying more attention to their kids' social platforms, where they're trying to incentivize everything that their kid could possibly do, and parents want to be involved, right? And so it's a lot more parents micromanaging their kid. Rather, when I was coming up, there wasn't NIL, right? I wish I could have got paid at Bowman for the matchups that I had, or when Jabari Parker came to the Genesis Center and we packed it out. I wish I would have got a cut from the gate, but that was illegal then, right? So now with NIL, parents and the relationships are much different. Like, you have parents who want to live through their kid and possibly make their kid a Fortune 500 company, whereas, like, when I got an offer, Boomer was to offer me, it wasn't go and tell everyone. It was like, we finally got an offer. It was much more meaningful.
Right.
But now kids go straight to their social media platform, and then a parent could be like, well, if we accept his offer, how much? And it just lose how organic and the passion for the game. Because I get upset when I do see kids go after school for the wrong reason, because at the end of the day, like, that's short term. So I feel like in Boomer's case, and like our area here sometimes lack reality because it's PNW and it's up the street. But if you look at the GLIAC and you look at Division II, it's really high level basketball. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, I can't say it enough on the air.
Yeah.
When I go see them play Ferris State or Grand Valley or something, I'm like, you know what? I just went to Purdue play Iowa. I mean, this is great basketball.
It's great basketball. And you could be a pro from the GLIAC in Division II, but you have to put the work in no matter where you go. And a lot of parents now are much younger, too. You know, they're very young.
Shoot, I'm as old as some of the parents. That's been a wild thing. No exaggeration. We've had guys in our program. I'm as old as mom, and I'm like, wow.
Let's say you have a kid in this era. You know the history of PNW. Hey, you're going to go there. But now parents don't really do their homework. They just go after what they see on social and the name, where it's like, well, you just went 5 hours out the way for your kid not to play, but you go to PNW, go to a high major Division II, put them in that column, and compete and get seen. Along with other opportunities at PNW's institution, because it is a D2, and that speaks volume. So it's a lot more educating the parents and also the players, and it's a challenge. And that's one of the questions I was going to ask Boomer. It's like, I don't have experience as a head coach, but I've been around to see the challenges, the highs and lows. When you got into the coaching business, did you know you were going to take on all these challenges in the beginning?
No shot, you know. When you're young and naive, you think that to circle it back to your question, Jim, like, I played for guys that were tough nose. I mean, I got punched in college, you know what I'm saying, like, by a coach. I don't think it was on purpose, and then he realized he did it, and it was like, whoa, you know what I'm saying, and that was no big deal back then, you know.
I'd been hit by a coach.
Yes.
Yeah, same idea.
Marvin did, until the guy from
Marvin was kind of famous for getting a little too tight.
I will let you finish, but to the point of the assault, it was the intentions was different, right? The guy from Ishka City was about to write a book on Marvin because how he disciplined us after the game. And right now he'll just be canceled, of course. You know, God rest his soul. But that was my same type of treatment. And my college coach used to always say, like, once you get out to the real world, no one will ever treat you like this.
Sure.
So
go ahead and talk about that evolution.
Well, that's what, you know, the way we saw it. And I played for a high school coach that has now won 8 state titles in Arizona. We were part of his first 2. And then I think there was a certain way of coaching back in the early 2000s that dead is the wrong word, because if you've got you know, clout and you've got 600 wins or multiple national championships, you can still do it that way. But for the rest of us who don't have that, you know, my resume was whatever. You know, it was really good at one point. I joked that people used to, they were blowing up my line to speak at clinics when we were turned around a program, had the greatest turn on the country at Trinity. And now I ain't getting those phone calls anymore. So I didn't become a worse coach. You know what I'm saying? But my point is, like, the NIL has changed it and the portal has changed it. But more than anything, I think it's revealing coaches who actually have the ability to have authentic relationships versus the ones that now have to do it because mom's involved or dad's involved or the NIL's involved. Like, now you have to do it. You have to build a relationship with the kid or you're going to lose them, right? As opposed to some of the younger generation, like, that's just what we do. Right. You know, the relationship piece, believe it or not, it comes easy to me because that's how I wanted to be coach. If you know that I love you, right, and you know that I care about you regardless of your performance, that frees you up to be the best version of yourself. Where if you're playing with pressure and nerves, if I turn it over, I'm coming out, like, coach only wants me for this and this and this. Like, you're not playing freely, I'm not coaching freely. So I think coaching has evolved, no question. But I think more than anything, young people can't be fooled as much anymore. And they know, man, is this dude authentic or is he not? Does he want me just because I'm a really good basketball player or does he want to do life with me?
You know what makes you authentic?
That's a great question. I think one is I really believe that basketball can be a family here. You know, we're not close to our family. We're 1,500 miles away. So, like, my boys are at practice. I have 9, 6, and 4-year-old boys. My wife makes a lot of dinners for the team, and they come over and kick it. I'm a relationship guy. Like, that's what drives me. I love sport. I love God. I love sports, and I love people. And when you combine it all, that's competing in relationships. So, like, that's just how I tick, Jim. Kind of like Reek, you know, like, I was kind of born that way. But the other thing is, like, ultimately, what lasts? You played at the high major level, right?
Yeah.
When was the last time anyone came up to you and asked you how many offensive rebounds you averaged?
It's been quite, besides D'Lo, right?
Right. Like, right now, like, you and I go out on the floor and we play against college dudes and we can hold our own. And everyone goes, oh, that's cool. But it doesn't matter to anyone. If you played at DePaul, how many years ago did you graduate?
2017.
Okay, so you graduated 6 years ago.
Right.
Right? And in 6 years, no one cares what you averaged?
Right.
To me, that says, well, what is it really about? It's really about launching your life and seeing what you're doing now and the relationship. You just mentioned off air, man, I ran into this homie. I ran into this teammate that I, you know, like, if it's not about the skill for the 99.8% people who don't have a 10-year career overseas or play in college basketball or play in professional basketball, to me, it's the relationship piece. I'm about to do, as Pastor Boom, my 5th wedding. I'm not even like a real pastor. I'm ordained to do weddings. But this is my 5th former player's wedding that I'm doing in 3 weeks. So that's where the relationship piece comes in. He's a 7-footer. He had a chance to be really good. Tore 2 ACLs back-to-back. Career over. Played at the best junior college in the country. They're number one in the country. And now people look at him like, oh, did you play professionally? He's like, no. But his life is awesome. He's making a lot of money. He's impacting the world. He met an amazing woman. So that's where the relationship comes in. I know that was a lengthy answer, yeah, but like, no, that's, nobody cares about
your
ability.
You know how
ability.
Many people are going to want you to marry him now that you said that? On
Yeah, come on now. Yeah. I charge a lot.
there you go. Yeah, that's the best part. Again, I was telling him that a former player, Vinko, I coached him at Bosco, and he saw me at Lollapalooza, and I was jumping up and down because Diesel is one of my many role models from afar who I don't know, because you can have mentors who you may not know in person.
Sure.
And Shaq is one of them, not because of the commentary or his business, but he's a DJ, right? And
came to Purdue Northwest.
Right? Come DJ on. Diesel.
PNW.
So yes. Yeah, sold it out, right?
I would like to get that tape.
Yeah. Oh, he was awesome.
Yeah. So it was sold it out. And so I never hear anyone question why he does what he does outside of commentary, Hall of Famer, all his business ventures. And so it's like, why can I put myself in all these different spaces? And I'm watching someone at 7 foot pretend and have the confidence to go out here and be DJ Diesel. And that's the ultimate inspiration. And so with Vinko, he jumped up and down with me. And that was like, I must have impacted your way, because you'd be like, man, my coach is here. I really don't want to be next to him. But he stood there the whole time and was like, man, I'm here. And I was like, wow. You know, that was a small segment.
You
gotta
also, well, that's impact. You know what I'm saying? That's you might have taught that dude how to, you know, shoot a baby fade or, you know, a Dirk, whatever. But, like, ultimately, like, that's impact. And that's – if you're not in coaching for that, I would argue, why are you in coaching at all?
I would have a little bit more realistic view of that, is that Binko's coming up and hanging around by DeJuan because DeJuan's just like a magnet for the opposite sex, man. And he has his girlfriend with him, and they're still coming up.
I was close to the stage, this one. I was very close to the stage.
Region rats. That's what Shaq kept saying. Region rats. PNW. Yeah.
Yes.
Did he?
Yeah, he was great, man.
That's awesome. And, again, the impact, and most parents feel like, let's say, Jim, you wanted a five-star recruit or a player with some notoriety. Hey, Jim, how much do you want to interview my son? And you like, dude, I just want to have him here at the local radio station, man. But that small statement carries to PNW. It's like, hey, Boomer, how much? And you like, dude, we're just trying to hear win games, get your son better, and give him opportunity outside the game. And so I still go back to my coach who recruited me once I left DePaul. And I'm like, hey, coach, I know I was a headache to you, but I was that guy that gave you a double-double. I know that I didn't always follow your rules, but I knew when I stepped on that floor how important it meant for me to go out here and win. But this is what I'm doing with my day-to-day. You know, I'm not in the NBA. I'm not overseas. But I make just as much dough as someone that's playing 8 months overseas away from their family. Just so you know, coach, but I appreciate everything you taught me. And that's something like –
that's a relationship.
The relationship that I have. And
you guys are showing me something here.
So I'm big on the relationship piece, just like he said. That's why when I see him out on a recruiting trail, like, I'll stop filming to have the conversation with Boomer, because he's from my area now. And you got to keep those people close when you're out on that recruiting trail, because they'd be like, man, Rico, I see you out here hustling. I'd be like, well, you got to tell your coach what players you seeing on Monday, so I guess we're both hustling, right? So I'm big on that too, and so I was happy to hear his perspective, and that was a great question.
You know, I'll draw a parallel. I'm significantly older than both of these guys, but I'll give you an example. You know my high school football coach, John Friend. We have maintained a very long relationship, and I go to all of the dinners and testimonials for him, and he gives a speech over here when they name, and you know, he singles me out. We have a relationship, but it's a vertical relationship. There's no, I mean, you know, he's coach and I'm still the player when I see him. There's not the kind of relationship, and I've known the guy for 50 years since I started 12 years old playing for him. That is never going to change. It's a whole different world in terms of that relationship. I love watching what you do, because I see you on the court, I see you during practice, I see you around the campus here, and they are part of you, and it is authentic. I just don't know how do you, I don't know, I wouldn't even know how to do that, honestly.
And that's, again, I think part of that is Coach Friend. You talk about, I was reading a book about legacy the other day. It said, You can have success without legacy, but you can't have legacy without success. And, like, the difference there, like, you talk about legacy. That's the first guy that popped in my mind was Coach Friend. But he grew up in a different era, you know. And for me, I go and pick that dude's brain weekly, and I just sit down, hey, tell me something, you know, give me some wisdom. And I think he's growing at whatever age he has, as much wisdom as he has. Yeah, that this dude wants to share it. And for me, it comes naturally, but it also comes because it's a changing landscape, right? The adapt or die philosophy. You got 9 hats that you're wearing, which is normal. You know, growing up, you know, my dad worked the same job and did the same hours and all this kind of stuff. Now, if you keep the same job for a decade, people are like, what's wrong? Why aren't you moving? So it's the adaptability, and it's the 18 to 25-year-olds are all about what's right in front of them now. You know what I'm saying? Whether it's their phone, whether it's social media, whether it's a relationship piece, like, you have to have a relationship. You used to be able to say, I'm coach, which is why you should trust me and work for me. Those days are gone.
You got to earn it.
Now you have to earn it. And the way guys like me, who is a very average human, I was an average player. I'm an average looking dude. You know, like, I don't walk to Lollapalooza and attract people. I'm normal. I think the one thing that separates us as a staff is, like, we can earn that trust because of the way that we authentically care about guys.
I'm honored to be here with DeJuan Rico. I make fun of him because I don't see enough of him. And I love to see the transformation. I love to see it. But thanks for letting me sit in. I appreciate it, guys.
Also, before you leave, I told Boomer this because you can answer this question. I always see, because I want to get back, I got some important statements and quotes that I want to talk about with Boomer. But I always see on internet the sports, the Dean and Barbara White always gets a lot of traction. You know, for those that utilize the Hammond Sportsplex, what is their criteria to, like, have events there?
Well, we just did the Taekwondo. We broadcasted that, the national Taekwondo tournament right down the street here.
And it's more.
And I think I know what you're saying because Dean and Barbara White is kind of out there and they got them.
Every event, not just basketball, but boxing and after school activities. And it's like, is the Hammond Sportsplex secluded or is there a specific criteria that goes in to where they're only holding events for their filter?
Well, I think what part of it is they don't have the panache of having one of the richest guys ever in the state of Indiana's name on your front right there. And it's over here, but it's very well used. I mean, PNW guys are there all the time practicing. Right. And, you know, there's a lot of local people. But I don't know, you may not even know this, but they're putting a massive YMCA bigger than Dean and Barbara White, bigger than the Crown Point one, right next to it. So it's not going to be a secret as much anymore.
Because I canceled my membership from the Y because it was overly crowded. I didn't want to work out next to
my The real reason was there were too many lifeguards and you couldn't do your backflip off of the high dive.
Yeah,
I know, bro. I saw you the other day.
I was pretty upset, so I canceled it. And I was like, I could just take that in my new membership, which is Core Power, and I do a lot of scope, right? And it was just oversaturated. I missed the Omni. Just like humans, we hate change. And when the YMCA took over, I was pretty upset. You know, I missed the Omni. I missed that exclusive.
There's way more people. I agree. But they're going to build one right down
hopefully
the street
that,
here.
Hopefully that traction goes to Hammond. I'm still trying to get on the Boys and Girls Club committee. Because I saw the face of everyone's headshots there, and I was like, well, I think one more person could fit on that other side. So
he's DeJuan Marrero. He's letting me come in. This is what we do normally. I've stayed way longer than I normally would. Thanks for having me.
Oh, thank you. Boomer, great perspective on the current landscape of college basketball with the article that I sent you. And I sent this to Paul Biancardi, and I'm in a group chat with him, and we talk hoops. Again, he's a colleague, but I look at him like coach-player relationship. You know, it's just different. The dying words of every successful business is somebody sitting there saying, this is how we always done things. Adapt or die. And when I went to my first UCLA game to watch Keon Brooks and Tiger Campbell, because they were from the Gym Rats community, so I had to work the phones to get some tickets, right? And I don't like to name drop what I do unless it's I need those tickets.
Sure.
And so I had to name drop everything I did, and I got the tickets. But I'm walking around campus in L.A., and Mick Cronin is a Midwest guy, and he has zero tolerance, right? And I'm watching him just get in a Dean Bonas, you know, tail, and I'm watching him coach Amir Bailey, and hearing him adapt in that culture gave me a ton of respect for him because it's very hard, the standards. And, you know, when he says adapt or die, you know, how do you perceive that and what processes through your mind?
Yeah. One, Mick Cronin, you know, again, they're doing it at a different level. When you're talking about the elites of the Power Five, you know, the top 15, 20 programs.
And for someone who may not understand that, you know, give them from your a coach perspective.
Yeah. It's really impressive because a lot of these dudes have been coaches for 20 years.
Right. Know?
And what I mean by coaches is basketball is everything. You're cutting film, you're practice planning, you're doing individual workouts off, you know, the recruiting calendars changed, but it used to be just one weekend after another. And at that level, you're chasing high school freshmen, eighth graders. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like, that's different. So you're recruiting a kid for 4 or 5 years before he might even set foot on your campus. So to adjust for him and realize, man, I got to change some things, like that shows you his growth mindset. But also from a coach's standpoint, like this landscape has completely changed. It's changed in the 9 years that I've been a head coach. There was no NIL. There was no transfer portal. a lot of teams that are now Division II were either Division I there or they were NAI. A team that I got recruited by that was NAI, you know, 18 years later is now a prominent Division I. So many things are changing, including our student athletes. And so if you don't adapt, like I said, they will see right through you. And you have to have an awareness of what's going on around you or you won't be able to keep up.
That's big time. And another quote I'm going to read you that I sent him, because I love guys that's been in the game for a minute because they'll give you their honesty.
Sure.
And we have debates about specific basketball players. And, again, it's the coach's player relationship because he knows that when he texts me, I'm going to be a straight shooter. I'm going to call a few people to be like, hey, is it sure if I give my honest opinion? But he always wants that honest assessment. And I sent him a quote that says, basketball is not an equal opportunity sport. Mm. Better shooters will always get more shots. Want more shots, become a better shooter, make more shots in practice. Earn opportunity to shoot in the game, earn your coach's confidence. And what does that mean to you when you coach your players?
Yeah, we talk about it all the time, especially when you're talking about scholarships and things like that. Break it down for you. At the non-Division I level, at the Division I level, you're either a full scholarship or you're a walk-on. At the D2 or NAI level, you can be on a full, you can be on a partial, you can be, you know, 75, 50, 25, whatever. You can get $1,000 maybe from one school. And at Division III level, there's no athletic scholarships. So you talk about it not being equal opportunity. Like, that's the reality. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is not everybody plays a certain amount of minutes and we're all happy. I love Nick Saban's quote, you want to make someone happy, go sell ice cream. And so I tell guys all the time, and I tell campers, like, you people say, well, coaches have favorites. You're darn right we have favorites.
Absolutely. You know? Like, yeah.
My favorite guys are the guys that can stick shots, make reads, compete on D, are great teammates, bring it every day, work outside of practice. Like, those guys give themselves a better chance to win. And in a reality, competition drives everything. You don't just get to show up at your work and get a raise because you're a good person.
Like, right.
You got to out-compete the guy next to you or the gal next to you to go earn it. Now, unfortunately, just because you're a nasty competitor and just because you work, you know, like, take you and me, for example. All right, I could work my tail off. And there was a time before my senior year, I was working out 6 hours a day, 6 days a week to get the best I could possibly be. Well, even me doing that, I was not as good as you. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Just being honest. Like, right. That's, I think, in a time where social awareness is at an all-time high,
right?
Self-awareness sometimes is at an all-time low. And so you have to be the guy that understands yourself. And, man, this is my chance to get better. This is my chance to play. I'm this for our team. And the guys that do that, they give themselves the best chance to be on the floor.
Man, there you guys have it, the one and only Purdue Northwest head men's basketball coach, Coach Boomer Roberts. It's a pleasure to have you on episode 190 on the podcast.
Thanks, Reek. Appreciate you, brother.
Standing in line to see the show tonight, and there's a light on, heavy glow. Waiting for